Good morning. Welcome to the 1045 Technical Track session. Our first speaker this morning is William Vandendries. He is currently pursuing a Master's of Science in Information Studies at the University of Texas at Austin School of Information. His focus there is on recorded sound collections, archives, preservation, description, and tools that facilitate collaboration. William also co-founded and is chairman of the board of the Audio Preservation Fund in 2009, a nonprofit working with private collectors, institutions, and their recorded sound collections. William?
Thank you, Mark. Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me. Before I get started, I'd like to say a few words of appreciation. As a student collector and nonprofit chair, working with collectors, institutions, and their collections, I'd like to express my thanks to the ARSC community. Last year, I and several of my student colleagues joined ARSC and attended our first conference in Kansas City, and we were welcomed with open arms, and we just came away with the best of impressions. And in the past year, I had the chance to collaborate with several ARSC members or receive consultation from them, and then now getting the chance to present on that project is an honor for which I'm very much grateful. I'd also like to note that Jenny Doctor, who I'm sure is starting a fabulous presentation in the other room, and I were kind of lamenting the fact that we weren't able to attend each other's because they have kind of a similar spirit behind them, and she wanted me to mention that she's organizing kind of an informal gathering at lunch after these sessions for anyone that's interested in her topic and kind of pursuing our topics together. Hers is on forming a support group for institutional repositories with sound recording collections. So the project on which I am presenting aims to create a directory or registry of audio collections held by private collectors, institutions, and corporations. In the spring of 2013, the National Recording Preservation Plan was published, and the report, which contained a number of recommendations intended to steer this country's sound recording preservation activity, held one recommendation of particular interest to me. The recommendation reads, to create a publicly accessible national directory of institutional, corporate, and private recorded sound collections. I became very excited about the prospect of working on such a directory based on my nonprofit work as well as my collecting and academic interests. And I decided to contact the director of the plan, Brenda Nelson Strauss, to see if anyone else had also expressed interest in this project. She very generously suggested several people whom I contacted, and one such project, which is the National Folklore Archives Initiative, appeared to share a lot of common goals with the description of the directory and the plan, but it had a kind of a different scope. It was focused on folklore collections. And also before and during last year's conference, I was able to talk with some other ARSC members, Sam Berlowski and Brandon Burke, who had also pursued some development of a project such as this, and was able to follow up with them after the conference as well. During the conference, I also had the opportunity to speak with David Giovannoni and Kurt Nock about the recorded sound collection tool, and they offered some very valuable perspective from the private collector community. So throughout the summer months that followed last year's conference, I communicated with all of these ARSC members, and Sam and Brandon were very generous to share some of the work that they had already done, including some preliminary database structures and some design requirements. And we worked together and kind of continued to develop those things, and we're really focusing on the requirements set out in the preservation plan, but additional requirements manifested through our discussions, as well as community feedback and some user testing that we've done. So there are five main requirements that are explicitly included in the National Recording Preservation Plan for such a directory. And the first is that it should be web-based. The second, the directory should also allow users to create and update directory entries about themselves or the organizations they represent, as well as the collections held by these different parties. The directory should strive to be inclusive. That is to say that it should accommodate information about collections held by you know, all the different communities that are represented you know, within the RSC membership. The collection information in the directory should be scalable. In other words, a minimal amount of collection information should be required to create an entry in the directory. You know, enough information to accurately describe the contents of the collection, but not so much that it becomes time intensive and you know, becomes prohibitive to participation. The minimal information that is required could then be expanded upon as resources allow in the future. And lastly, and I quote, a combination of controlled vocabulary selections and free text opportunities will build into the directory some uniformity of language for searching while offering ways for collectors and institutions to describe the uniqueness of their collections. So why? Why would we want to build this? What are the benefits and who will be benefiting from this? So here's some points I'd like to make in no particular order, but a project such as this would foster collaborative preservation projects that include collections held by all of these communities. A current preservation and access project that successfully does this is the National Jukebox. It was you know, successfully incorporated members from the corporations and the collector and institution communities to create a fantastic resource to aid scholarly research. Every year, this year being no exception, the RSC conference showcases some of the passionate scholarly research that is conducted using sound recordings as primary research documents. This research would hopefully be amplified with a discovery tool such as this directory. Estate planning and the fate of private collections, whether into a cultural heritage institution or not, has been a persistent topic among the arts community for quite some time, and it has been especially focused on at this conference. My own work with the Audio Preservation Fund has also shown me the desire of not all, but many private collectors, or in some cases their heirs, to see the private collections successfully transitioned into one or more institutions. Private collections frequently play a complementary role and sometimes even a founding role for archival and library collections, but it's common for private collectors to experience difficulty when searching for institutions whose collecting scope is a good match with their own collecting interests. For those private collectors that are interested in placing their collections in an institution, and you know, as John Tefteller so aptly put this morning, especially those collections holding the icon records, you know, the directory could assist them in locating like-minded and interested institutions. To help producers locate rare and unique materials, the musical recycling panel that was on Thursday morning provided us a glimpse into some of the best historical reissue work being done, and a collections directory would aim to assist this work as well, increasing the knowledge of and accessibility to rare or unique materials held in collections. And lastly, no other online resource, at least one that I know of yet, exists to bring together information about collections held by all of these communities. Websites exist that aggregate collection information for archives and libraries. And separately, there's also websites that help private collectors, you know, track and catalog their collections. And there have been print resources in the past that have attempted to span across the institutional private collections to an extent, but the question being asked now is, where is the current online version of that? When I started working with the existing database structure that was given to me and before any interface design was begun, I decided to send out a couple of surveys last fall, and if anybody in this room took those surveys, I, again, thank you very much. It was distributed to gather feedback from the communities that would potentially use the directory. Community feedback is going to be critical to the success of a project, and surveys were a great method for obtaining feedback early on. The surveys were open for about 2 weeks in the fall of 2013. They were announced through email discussion lists, websites, social media, and forum postings hosted by ARSC, the Society of American Archivists, the International Association of Sound and Audiovisual Archives, the 78L mailing list, Music Library Association, Oral History Association, Society for Ethnomusicology, and the Talking Machine Forum. And the survey basically asked the following questions. Who owns sound recording collections? How do they group, categorize, and generally conceptualize the formation of their collections? What are the nature of the collection's contents? What kind of documentation exists for collection description and access? And how frequently, for what purpose, and using what methods did respondents search for sound recordings? They were started 311 times, and they were completed 252 times. The survey results were incredibly informative, and I've made anonymized versions of the results available now. And I'll be sharing some key points from the survey results throughout the rest of the presentation, and links to those results will appear at the end for anyone that's interested. So I'd like to take a moment with this slide to give you a peek kind of behind the scenes. The data that is at the heart of the site is stored in a MySQL database, and the server is an Apache server. The server is one to which I have access to as a graduate student at the University of Texas at Austin. The web pages that insert, retrieve, update, and display the data stored in the database are use a combination of coding languages and style documents shown here, such as PHP, JavaScript, CSS, these things. So focusing now in on this lovely image, we see a diagram that represents the structure of the database. Basically, the rectangular boxes are the tables. And zooming a little bit further, we can see individual lines just represent fields within the database, you know, each one holding a particular piece of information relevant to that record that's held in the database. The lines linking the database, or the tables, are really just kind of the roadmap that connects all of these pieces of information in one way or another. So let's go ahead and start. I'm gonna take a quick tour of the progress that has been made so far. As you'll soon see, the site is still a work in progress, but it's well on its way to meeting the requirements that were put forth in the National Recording Preservation Plan. So when the home page is opened, a list of collections entered into the directory are immediately available. And on the home page, the information about each collection includes the title, collection owner, and abstract. If any formats have been selected for a given collection, they would also appear below the abstract. By default, the information is presented in list form, but the option to display the results in other methods like such as grid form are available as well. To the left of the results is a panel that can be slid open or closed. Inside the panel are placeholders for what will soon become advanced search filters. They will include keyword filtering as well as attributes such as dates, formats, geographic information, owner, genre, and so on. This will also be the place where the results can be resorted. When asked about the number of collections held by themselves or their organization, survey respondents reported anywhere from one collection to thousands of collections. So even if a portion of these made it into the directory, the option to really narrow down the contents of the directory to an applicable set of results is going to be essential. So advanced search features such as filters are a very successful way of doing this. At the top of the results list, we also see a tab labeled collection owners. When we switch over to that, it displays a list of all of the collection owners with at least one collection entered into the directory. And after you have signed up for an account, you would not show up in this list until you entered information about at least one collection. The collection owner section is similar to the collection section in that it has a panel to refine results. It also has a panel over on the right side of the page. And this panel provides a quick glance at several pieces of information about the collection owner without leaving the page. In addition to the list and grid views, a map visualization of the owners has been that have entered location data is available. Survey responses from 17 different countries were recorded, and It's likely that even within the many countries that would potentially participate, the owners will be very geographically dispersed. So the map view would allow users to narrow down potential places of research at the local or regional level. So before we move on, I would like to note that an account is not required to search for collections. Anybody could go into this and browse or search for things. It would be only required to add collections and be listed. So moving on to profile page of a collection. So we're going to click on the title of one of the collections that's in the list on the home page, and this will take us to a profile page of this collection. We'll start by just viewing the page as a user that's not an administrator for this collection. So the title information and abstract are the first two pieces that are prominently displayed on the profile. These are also the only two required pieces of information, but if you choose, you could expand on this foundation. To the left is a two-tiered menu that would allow you to quickly jump to different pieces of information about the collection. The first tier of the menu currently holds descriptive information about the collection, and this includes things such as formats, languages, subjects, genres, and collection provenance, things like that. And the second tier of the menu contains items pertinent to accessing and using the collection, such as location, any access and use notes and restrictions that might be on the collection, and availability and preferred citation, things like these. So now, looking at the same page being edited by a user with administrative privileges, the preservation plan called for a combination of free text and controlled vocabulary fields. Both of these will be seen in this slide. Free text fields are updated by just simply typing into one of the sections, and controlled vocabularies, such as collection formats, are selected via checkbox. Of the optional fields, I expect formats will be one of the most frequently used. This was one of the top three methods used to group or describe collections, as reported in the surveys that were distributed. I'd like to mention one last thing before we move on. The survey results also showed that among collection owners, many different standardized and customized systems of description are used, which I'm sure is not a surprise to anyone. One of the greatest challenges of this project is going to be reconciling these different approaches used by such a diverse community of collection holders. Some of the menu items shown here are possibly familiar to people that have experience with encoded archival description, but this is just one of many approaches to description that must be considered. Evaluating other methods of description used by institutions will be instructive, but I'm also very interested to hear what additional pieces of information would be most helpful for any collection owners to describe their collections and also to search for them. Now we'll take a look at one of the collection owner profiles. We're viewing this again as a non-administrator. From the collection page, we can navigate back to the home page using the global navigation, or we can navigate directly to the profile of an owner by using the quick links or the breadcrumbs up at the top of the page. By using the quick navigation items, we're now on the collection profile for the Fine Arts Library at UT Austin. Profile page for this institution or any other private collector or organization is comprised of two sub-pages, the profile and the collections list. Including profile information such as collecting interests, locations, services offered, and contact information is another piece of the puzzle for just maximizing the discovery and access and collaboration. If a user's profile is linked to, or if a user's personal profile is linked to an organization's profile, such as as an administrator, they only need one set of login credentials to access all of these multiple profile pages. They will all be listed under their kind of settings menu that is up at the top right of the page when they're logged in. In addition to the organizational or personal information on the profile page, there's also a section that lists collections directly held by this collection owner. To the left of the list is another placeholder where soon search filters will be implemented similar to on the homepage. Within the profile, there will also be information about related organizations in their collections. For example, on that slide, we saw that the Fine Arts Library was within the University of Texas at Austin system. If we follow the links up in the breadcrumbs at the top, then we'll come to the collections page for the entire University of Texas at Austin system. Direct user feedback during user testing early on highlighted the need to aggregate all collections held across departments within a large organizational system. So UT Austin has several archival repositories and libraries that currently hold collections, and this page is capable of aggregating and displaying that list of, or the list of collections held by all of them. This departmental ownership could now be seen directly below each collections title. So how do we populate the directory with collections? And the other features on the site and all these great ideas would be pretty limited if nobody was able to contribute. So logging in again as a collection owner and beginning on the collections page, we just begin by following the Add Collection link. As I mentioned on the collection profile page, only two pieces of information are required to enter a collection, the title and a brief abstract. Once the form on this page is submitted, easy follow-up navigation is displayed that would allow you to continue editing this collection or start another one. It's hopefully as easy as it looks. So starting to wrap up here, as outlined in the tour, the main requirements of the directory as set out by the preservation plan have been or are very close to being met. Some of the requirements will require ongoing development, such as the scalability of the collection descriptions, and some need to be revisited, tested, and refined, such as the controlled vocabularies. But in addition to refining and testing what is already in place, there are still many, many more things to do to fully accomplish some of the goals of the site and to keep pace with some of the other leading discovery and access tools online. I suggest that at least these five additions to the site be kept in mind as it is further developed. As mentioned before, keyword searching and result filtering, there's no reason why these can't be implemented in the near future. The directory tool should allow collection owners to use existing documentation about their collections to speed up the entry process. 90% of organizations and 62% of individuals reported in the surveys that some kind of electronic reference documentation exists for their collection. Not all of these will contain item-level inventories or description, but if collection-level information is in a spreadsheet or in an EAD document, then it could be uploaded with a CSV or, no, you don't think so, George?
You should just be able to link back to their own site where information already exists, so you don't have duplicate entry.
So that's the next one. but I totally agree. I think that multiple approaches to including this information is necessary. Whether it's allowing people to upload documentation that isn't already online, or going around and harvesting things that, for example, have been made available, like with the OAI model, things like that, or just linking back to information and pulling it in. These are all approaches that are, very much available today and, should be capitalized on. So in addition to the data that we'd like to get into the directory, other reference documents that might be helpful should be able to be uploaded. And lastly, or second to last, item level description. So one thing that has become apparent from the survey responses and subsequent feedback is that item level records will significantly increase the research value, potential for collaboration, and buy-in for a resource such as this. ARSC members, from the many perspectives within the ARSC community, frequently address the need to close the gap between data published in library catalogs and other resources such as discographies. And the differences between these two methods of description might lead some to say that the directory resource should remain at the collection level. I agree and disagree. I see this as an opportunity. I see that the directory should certainly start out at the collection level and create a stable foundation from which to build. But I think that, you know, just avoiding the problem posed by the different description methods would be a mistake. I think the spirit of this project is to include these different perspectives and find ways of, you know, working together and being inclusive. And you know, the collection level directory would hopefully assist actions such as discovery and research and digitization prioritization, the transfer of redundant items to institutions or collectors that can make great use for them, you know, and other things such as estate planning. So imagine how much more powerful a tool like this would be if these same actions could make use of item level records. The solution to this challenge is a topic of a long road that's already been being traveled. Past and current projects have set precedents that incorporate discographical data into institutional projects, one of the most recent being the Encyclopedic Discography of Victor Recordings, and which is now expanding into the American Discography Project. So what can we learn, or even better, you know, how can we incorporate the work that is already being done by these projects? There's also changes potentially occurring in regards to library cataloging, such as the development of BibFrame, as brought up in a previous session by Catelyn Hunter, and which is a possible replacement for MARC. So it has the potential for creating data models and structures that would address the needs of the greater ARSC community. So, you know, how is the ARSC community going to make its voice heard as, you know, this process goes on? I feel like it's, you know, absolutely necessary that we do. To more easily facilitate the goals mentioned throughout this presentation, I'll move on to the last point. It's been also proposed that some sort of internal messaging system be incorporated into future versions of the site. This is because posting contact information for organizations is not likely a problem on the web, but not all private individuals would necessarily want to post their personal contact information on the site. So to be able to send messages through and then have appropriate notifications would be a benefit. So the directory is temporarily sitting on a server at the UT Austin School of Information, but a long-term home for the directory really needs to be found. So where would it be? The preservation plan names ARSC as a guiding force to the directory, but it doesn't go into specifics about which organization or organizations might provide the resources for maintenance and continued development. This question cannot be answered today, but I do hope that the discussion starts today. The technological resources needed for the project in its current state are not large, but what will be necessary as the directory grows? And what about the human resources necessary to assist users and maintain the site? For these things, you know, funding will be absolutely necessary. But if this project is really sailing uncharted waters by including all of the communities that comprise ARSC and beyond, you know, who would be interested in funding such an unprecedented project? The feedback that I received from the two surveys has been very valuable. There are additional formal feedback methods that I plan to use, but I know that the most useful and the most instructive feedback that I can get will be the feedback that you give to me today and following this conference. So, you know, please don't be shy. And lastly, how can this project connect with similar projects and projects addressing the other recommendations in the preservation plan? Consulting the National Folk Life Archive Initiative could offer direction if they've already addressed problems that, you know, are still in the future of this project. And also, you know, would connecting this project with online discographical resources, like I mentioned before, make sense? I hope that these ways of moving forward together will be identified and, you know, hopefully realized. And one more thing. You may have noticed, but the project does not yet have a name. So if the name that I gave this presentation is any indication, coming up with clever names for things is not my strength. So if you have any suggestions at all, I'm all ears. So in conclusion, this project is obviously still in a very early stage, but this is the very reason that I wanted to come and present on the project at this time. I saw the conference as an opportunity to not only introduce you to the progress that has been made, but to hopefully inspire you to envision how the directory can benefit you and to tell me how it can be developed further to meet your needs. It's always a little bit nerve-wracking getting up and showing something that's, you know, not quite finished. But, you know, I feel like it's very important, and I really encourage you to, you know, think about how would you use this thing? You know, how is this going to benefit you? And please let me know, let us know, so that we can build it from here to accomplish those things. Just as I mentioned before, here are some links. Here's my email address if anybody wants to get in touch with me after the conference. Here is the URL for the site. It is publicly accessible right now. I don't want to leave it up for too long because we're going to move on to our next presentations, but come talk to me afterwards if you need to jot that down. Also, similarly, the links at the bottom are two links to the survey results that are now publicly available. So if you are interested in reviewing those, please come see me if you want more information about that. And thank you very much.
This is obviously a fairly sizable project with the potential for sizable questions. I think we have time for one or two questions right now, and if you have a question, raise your hand, I'll bring you the mic, but longer questions might have to wait to be fair to the other speakers as well. So do we have questions at this time? Okay.
For the non-signed-in views, are you building that to be a crawler-friendly?
Could you say that again?
Are you building the non-signed-in views of the database to be crawler-friendly so that if people have bots going around that they can find these?
It should be. It should be crawler-friendly, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's one of the hopes. I mean, to increase, you know, maximize the discovery of these things, I would definitely like to keep that as a definitely a possibility.
Other questions at this time? So I'm sure many of you will corner William shortly after this is over.
There's a question back here.
Oh, I apologize. Did I miss?
Yeah, I was just wondering, is it possible to cross-reference paper and photo collections along with the audio collections?
Right, so the...
Could you go ahead and use the microphone because recording it for the record?
Go for it. So, and I'll repeat that just in case anybody didn't hear it. He asked if there was a way to cross-reference paper or photo, or I'm assuming any other media collections with the audio collections. Yes, I mean, right now you could enter in any collection in there, and I'm hoping that, you know, as this develops, there will be ways to, you know, easily display related collections no matter what the media. So, yeah.
Our next speaker had to leave the room just for a second, so we have time for one more question. Are there other questions? In that case, I'll introduce him anyway and see how it goes. Yeah, I'll start a slideshow. That'll be fun. Hopefully it's not on an automated timer. That was very impressive timing, by the way. So.